hurt or help, appeal in the Vina Dati the Rabbananda Atrei Kvo Shiyua. Even if we interpret it to mean that Kodam Kadesh refers to the position of the local rabbis, as I will explain. Utfila Nabol Masha Katabri Kdushin. Let's first come to what he says about marriage law. She'efshal takein mishum mikta milta b'chul. Hebize v'shem shelo d'chub v'karashba. He quotes the Rashba. We can get to that part here, but it's a standard business. V'cheinu b'yemet v'simen tafkot na'am zel ha'shom. The Rashba writes, V'ilu v'atsu kol ha'kehila l'yog v'chnei ha'kalot eru. If the entire community wants to prevent against these troubles, that is, those are the cases where the girl would be married, the young girl, as a joke, would be married to a young boy, or a blackguard would come in and try to marry a girl without the consent of her parents, and so on. Ya'aseh ha'takana ba'mamad kulam, v'yakiu ha'ka'od mu'a ha'ker b'mo, el impen t'kavlon ha'isha midata o midata v'ya o v'tei ploni v'ploni. The Rashba says that the community has the capability of enacting a clause which says that unless the woman accepts the kiddushin in the presence of her father or some representative of the community and so on, the monies of the kiddushin are to be revoked. If we have a shulte and we bovins, a seyem is at a lashon, the kevan de madeh kadesh adat tere olana mekesh, vehem amu shem kadesh b'chahai gav naloyu b'kibishin shalom mamash, v'shemakim matzah b'nei even near yom okam l'tkot al kibi chui anam. Aval tavash po lo mishum zeh hatam katav ke. Rashba didn't use the phrase of kodem kadesh adat tere olana kadesh, v'ahemem lo nizkav v'kerosh b'gmar zeh lashon, elo b'inyan shahayu ha-kibishin yafir. The Gemara only uses the phrase the Kodem Kadesh Adatad Rabbanan Kadesh Yakin Rabbanan Kiddush Minei in the case where there was a valid, technically valid act of Kiddushin. Rak Naase Achar Kach Beget Pashut Inyan HaPoslo Al Pi Da Torah. V'Chazal Hashiu Mishol Kama Kadesh Bukul. Kind of a Bitul Haget. The cases, at least three of the cases, are where that we've seen where the Gemara uses the phrase that. Talking about the case where there was a valid marriage, and then there was an invalid divorce, and the Chazal wanted to sustain the divorce contrary to the halakha. Like in the case where the husband tried to cancel the get, ubahod the ain honest to give it. I will be kiddushin ruin. They didn't use the phrase of Kodem Kadesh Adatad Rabbanan Kadesh, but simply used the phrase that Akin Rabbanan Kadushin. The Gam Rashi v'Rashbam lo hitzku l'sfarzu elu makam shelo haya tchila takana al zeh l'hafkia hama'ot kidushin miyasuk ten. Mishum haki tzwikhan anuwa svar adekol makadeshu v'zeh v'aday rak l'nashek yoshu chazal. V'lo kol ha'oseh shelo kudat chazal yeh kidushin mitka'im chalila. Certainly not anybody who acts contrary to the wishes of chazal has his marriage revoked. K'mo shakatav v'zeh v'sheh v'shuva d'rash v'asim l'el k'ofeh. אבל אם היה תקנה שאם יעשו הקידושים בזה האופן שאין מקובל למצוא דעת ביתין שבעיר היא המאות הפקר. If the court has said that the monies that are used for this purpose contrary to their will, the monies are reserved, אין אנו צריכים לקל זה על הרי זה בכל הפקר ביתין הפקר. זה כסף קידושים. As far as the laws of enacting a local takana to usurp this money to prevent the kiddushin from taking place in the first place, the local courts or the local community can use other powers, namely hefker beitin. The language of the Shulte Rigon is difficult. That maybe he doesn't believe in the power of the local courts to confiscate money. But all matzim ubezed yishlum b'tayyavim b'rokeh l'tenei mamana k'yishu v'amayi kachin v'yishkeh n'sha'en l'keh l'apshir mitzad eishit v'kam v'lo matzim ubezed yishlum. And yishum haki yidin tamah atarash v'am yishum b'kol v'kal yishidat v'rabanam. But I wish I died to the Rabbanam day after. Pamiyo hadin emet m'kuyam m'yom kadmon v'mishvira l'om ma'alash v'shal v'otok v'uva. About the actual fact that the local community can legislate not to allow marriage to take place if it's contrary to the enactments, say requiring the parents to be present or requiring the rabbi to be present or trying to represent the community, that is not dependent necessarily on the principle of kodim karei shabbat erobah. Aval masha katav b'inyan dikin, the Kevon de Mekadesha da Teter Rabbanan de Atrei, Mishum Hachi Eilu Nifkeh Beket Pashut, Ki Im Haldat Rabbanan de Atrei, Hu Davan Nifla. But his assertion that the divorce is not valid, it's not done according to the local approval of the rabbi, that is amazing. The Eilu Tzorkel Bikuyi Tening, Agam, Da Filu Yiyah HaPeor Shadate de Rabbanan de Atrei, Kmo Shehin Ashut Rishbon de Dato Rashba, Mikol Mokom, Eich Maksimu Lalume HaKidushin Shilo Yil Get Pashut Shekasher Abidit Torah. How can the local rabbis create a marriage that cannot be terminated by a divorce that's valid according to the laws of the Talmud? Ukvah Hishiru Chazal Gavra Rabba Mamilta Ulo Tachati Kolet. But the rabbis, our Chazal, have told us that when a great man says something, pause a bit and try to consider what he is saying. Ve'im shaloh kafilu lo yehadin emet, and even if we need not agree with the Shotei HaGibori, mikol makom harei aleinu lahasim lev, we should pay attention, lahadin davar nifla kazeh. So don't reject him out of hand because of the reform movement or whatever may have been said here. Ve'kasavo ha'yiti l'farishah. And I was of the thought to interpret it this way. The Moshe Kedushin al Dat Rabbanon di Atrei, Kacha Kedushin al Dat Rabbanon di Atrei, Vagam Zeh Niklal Uma Shekadu Kedat Moshe Yisrael, Vesvirli Rashil Da Vigvod in Istamar Vishat Kedushin, Kolosh Gam Haget Pashut in Yer Otsor Hakkaat Oda Kedushin al Dat Rabbanon di Atrei. Aval Adayim Tamua, Da Filu Nema Hafi, Vigvilo Yukha Lachzovo, Lugareish al Dat Rabbanim Acherim. So what if whatever he undertook at the time of the marriage, ומצאתי סייפה חדש שנכבד דברי חיון לא תרף בחרוב נתמוס בזל כבר והוא על ביתין הידיד על דברי הראשם את הדבון בציפה על תאי ותנון כזה ממש. So let's skip to the next paragraph. ונראה לומר בדעת השולטי הגיבורים one must interpret the שולטי הגיבורים דבר שאיני מבין בעצמי מה שאני מדבר. I have to interpret in the שולטי הגיבורים something that I myself don't understand what I'm saying. However, I'm forced to this conclusion even if it cannot be understood. No, not proven. I'm forced to this conclusion even though I don't understand what I myself am saying. The statement of the Gemara on the cancellation of the get, or the phrase of ain honest to begin, we shouldn't be called Kadesh Dalhadar Abanamanes, Kashela Hadin. That's hard itself to understand. Just the Gemara on the face of it is difficult to understand. Heich Maaseh HaGet Kasher. How was the get rendered valid? Rumashem Kadesh Dalhadar Abanamanes. Hatosvote Yidin. The Tosvot understood, Shechachamim Hikiyu HaKidushin Lamafreya Be'enem. The understanding of the Tosfot was that there was an annulment of this marriage. The Naaseh Knuyal Liyikah. And therefore she was never married to this man. Beikshu al Zahar Bevi Yishvu Vedolta. And they asked many questions about how this was possible, that the marriage was retroactively revoked, and they left the matter in difficulty. Bar Ashbabu Ki Yushav Vedikim Peri Talib Rashba was of the opinion, as we learned last week, that this changes the mental state of the husband. That since he knows that the rabbis are going to revoke his kiddushin, on Achreya, make all of his acts of intimacy, acts of fornication, he really doesn't intend to cancel again. Ramban also uses this phrase of Kodun Kadesha Dapad Rabbanan Makesh in order to certify the existence of a single agent to testify that the get is written properly. And on this we cannot sustain the position of the Tosfot that there was an annulment, retroactive annulment of the marriage. We met Nakati Dushinina. We have to interpret, according to Rashi and Ramban, since the marriage has been made conditional on the courts, they can in fact weaken the bonds of marriage. Even though this was a legitimate marriage, this woman has been married to her husband for 35 years, there was never any retroactive annulment. Nevertheless, the marriage is terminated by a divorce which is not valid according to the Torah. He is again making an amazing statement. What he is saying is, we have interpreted so far the phrase, what is the typical case that we're talking about? A man writes a get, changes his mind. He cancels again. But the Chachamim have declared that he can't cancel again, meaning that they've sustained a get even though we didn't tell them this get is invalid. You get mad at your wife, she's out visiting some relatives in Kalamazoo, and you send her a get. Then you calm down a bit and say, gee, we've been married for 40 years, maybe I shouldn't be so hasty. So you change your mind and cancel the get. The halacha says that nevertheless she's divorced. Right? That was the problem. Since you were not able to notify her of this cancellation in any way, the get is valid, and she's divorced, and she's no longer your wife. So the rabbis have done something to your marriage. You issued a get, you canceled it. So then we didn't talk about that get is no longer current, no longer valid. Nevertheless, the Chachamim have instituted a law which says that's the Tana. As the Netziv says, up until today, we have been interpreting this takana in one out of two ways. One is that there was an annulment. What they have declared was that you were never married. Up until now, we have been interpreting to mean that the marriage has been annulled retroactively. So all of these 40 years, you've never been married.
So that's like creating a fiction so that she should really
be not married. But that fiction was created in such a way that the marriage was retroactively annulled. That was what Tosfot said, right? That's how we learned it last week. The alternative position stated by the Rashba was that the Chachamim threatened to do this, and they got you so scared that they might do this that you really never canceled again. But neither of those positions jives with the language of the Gemara, or a half dozen other things. The simplest interpretation of the Gemara, and that's the one that the Nitziv is now saying, is that somehow or other, the rabbis have the right not to annul this marriage retroactively, but to terminate it. That's a drastic conclusion. They're able to weaken the bonds of marriage, so to speak, to such an effect that a divorce like this becomes valid, even though, in principle, it should be invalid. The kevan de kluyin hakidushin bedat beit din. I'm rereading what we read before. Since the marriage has been made dependent upon the intent of the beit din, yicholin lahachlish koach hakidushin. They can change the character of the marriage contract to weaken it in such an extent, even though this was a completely valid marriage and has not been retroactively annulled. There's been no annulment here, there's been a termination. You've been married for 35 years or 40 years, and now, starting today, you're no longer married. But we're not claiming a fiction that there has been a retroactive termination. Nevertheless, the rabbis have the right to legislate that a get that midin Torah should not be considered as valid. It's a drastic statement. Rakshi ye get mikomakom. The chain bi adam la'achlish b'zeh shelo yeh chazkat eshishish v'yeh eid echad ne'mah ma'mah meit ba'leh o b'fanen echad o b'fanen echad. Hein kvar anarti. I've already said that I can't understand what I myself am saying. Etc. So he brings other cases where this is a conceivable path. Just as the rabbis have the right to weaken the bonds of marriage, even though they're not annulling the marriage, they haven't uprooted it, but have simply weakened it. Similarly, they have the ability to strengthen a marriage above and beyond what it is in the Torah. These are the things which are amazing to me. Nevertheless, on all of this, there's the hidden agenda. Okay, so this is an amazing document from the Nitziv, basically sustaining this very dangerous position of the Shiltei HaGibor, right?
Since it's what, 870 around there?
Yep, approximately. Now let's take a look at an entirely different letter of the Nitziv, a letter for public consumption, not for private consumption.
It's got public anyway.
This one got public, but nobody reads it. You people around this table, it's sort of hidden in the Shiva Svarim.
So who put it into the computer database?
So, a typist.
You think she read it? Who leaked it?
Yeah, who leaked it?
Okay. So here are two pages of an entirely different position that an incident takes for public consumption. So two pages, one and two.
This
is from the Bar Ilan database. This is from the Bar Ilan response.
Did Rebbe buy that rock or the CD?
Yeah, you can buy it for $1,000.
Yeah, what do you call that?
CD RAM.
Bar Ilan, your preference to the two because of
that. No discount.
Wow. If you have good connections with Bar Ilan, you might get a discount. Okay. All right. Now, here, this is a public letter. Okay.
And now, how much time do we have?
9:07.
Maybe we should give the background to this, because we studied all of this in some great detail. So I wrote out a summary of, where did I put it? Yeah. Using a different computer program, I'm trying to remind you of what happened over the last 200 years in the issue of marriage and divorce.
Well, that's the whole book, I think.
There should be 4 pages as a unit. Hope I'm enough. Now, all of you have the original documents who've come to my chair for the last 2 years. So if I don't have enough here, which is just an English summary of material which you studied in the okay. All right. All right. Did I make enough, everybody? Okay. All right. So I'm reminding you that the beginnings of the story started with the beginning of civil legislation regarding marriage. Up until the end of the 18th century, marriage was controlled by the various different religious communities, like it is in Israel to this day. Right? There are no civil laws in Europe regarding marriage. Those were all purely ecclesiastical laws. So that the Catholics did what they did, the Muslims did what they did, the Jews did what they did, nobody interfered with anybody else, and everybody lived happily or unhappily ever after, as the case may be. Right? In 1783, the Emperor Joseph introduced his Ehepatent, which was the first piece of civil legislation in Europe affecting marriage, right? And he made some requirements. It was basic. It wasn't too original, the Ehepatent, but what it basically did was put the Roman Catholic canonical law and sort of copied it over, more or less, but made it a piece of civil legislation. In particular, for example, you have to announce marriage in advance, the notion of bans, right? The public announcements several weeks in advance of pending marriage and so on, which were part of the Catholic procedure, became part of the civil law. A consequence of this was that the actual marriage itself was done by the community's religious authorities, right? So in other words, the still 2 Catholics that wanted to get married were married by a priest. 2 Jews who wanted to get married were married by a rabbi. There was no such thing as civil marriage not done by the religious authorities. But the overall marriage themselves were regulated by civil legislation. In particular, if you didn't have the marriage in accordance with the Ehepatent, that marriage was declared by the civil government to be null and void. So, for example, if a man and a woman didn't go through the necessary procedures, announce the marriage several weeks in advance in the synagogue and so on and so forth, and simply made kiddushin, you would have a situation where, as far as the din tova was concerned, the marriage was valid, but as far as the civil law is concerned, the couple was declared as not valid.
Is that any different now?
Well, you're used to it now.
Yeah, right.
Right? However, this is a really serious problem, right? It was a problem in Austria in the 1780s, and it's a problem today. If the man and the woman are no longer are declared not to be married according to the laws of the state of Massachusetts, then according to these laws, the woman can go and marry somebody else, and the full sanction of the courts will sustain her right to marry somebody else, whereas, according to the halacha, she's a married woman to the first husband. So, this was the first time that there was a conflict between civil legislation on the one hand and marriage, the halacha on the other. The the Note of Yehuda wrote a whole book on Jewish marriage, which he gave to the legislature in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and the Note of Yehuda protested against this idea that a marriage was declared null and void if it was not done in accordance with the Eichatan, even though it was completely valid according to Jewish law. And I think what happened was that the cabinet and the members of the legislators were willing to go along with the Note of Yehuda, but the emperor drew a firm line and rejected this protest by the Note of Yehuda.
And was it the conflict with the Yehuda?
No. Basically, what this was a civil legislation modeled on the Catholic
Church. There was no conflict with the other religion.
Right. But this was something that was, had taken place in the Austrian, Austro-Hungarian Empire, which at that particular time, and certainly a little bit later, incorporated a large number of the Jews of Galicia, for example. Well, Moslems had their own problems. At the moment, we're trying to see what happened. So the question was how to deal with this. Okay. And the first attempt to really deal with this was done by the... I'm reminding you of things that we studied several years ago, and I really don't want to go into it in all the detail, because I just put them all here on this paper so you can review it. The first attempt to really deal with this was the rabbi in Trieste tried to enact a takana, a form of hefker beitin hefker, which said that any marriage, any Jewish marriage, which did not conform to the requirements of the civil marriage, would be declared null and void in advance. In other words, just as the Rashba, as we've already seen this evening, said that the local community can make such regulations, nullifying marriages which don't meet their requirements, namely that the father agree, or that the parents be present, or that some member of the representative of the community present, they can nullify a marriage in advance by the technique of hefker beitin hefker, declaring the money to be null and void. The rabbi of Trieste tried to institute such a piece of legislation, saying that any marriage of a man makes his kiddushin to a woman, kedas moshe v'yisrael, that it doesn't conform to the laws of the state of Massachusetts, then even though there are two eidim present, that marriage is null and void. That was the thrust of his attempt. And may I remind you that this attempt had different reaction depending upon who was asked. The Sephardic rabbis, the Gedolim amongst the Sephardic rabbis at that time, basically the Chidah, sustained this takana. So the Sephardic rabbanim were willing to go along with this, but the leading halakhic authority in the Ashkenazi community, at that time was the Chatam Sofer, was unwilling to go along. Now, one has to try to read between the lines of the Chatam Sofer, and it's difficult to do so. I think there's certainly three ingredients as to why the Chatam Sofer, going into why the Chatam Sofer did not go along with this takana. One is that the traditional Ashkenazic position was against using hefker beitin hefker in this context. We saw that the Rashba and so on were willing to utilize this, giving the local communities such authority, but the Marshal and the Ramah and the various other Ashkenazic authorities were reluctant to go along with this. It was sort of the opposite of their attitudes towards Na'ivi. So that's one reason. Another reason, which I think is probably the central reason, is the one that we discussed earlier, namely that the Chatam Sofer was fighting the reform movement. And therefore, he was worried about, if we do this, then we can do anything. Right? Exactly your type of argument, whereas the Sephardic community didn't have any problems with that because there was no reform movement in the Sephardic community. It was still a traditional Jewish society. So what you have here is an instance of the creation of something new, namely an Orthodox community. Orthodoxy didn't exist before the time of the Chatam Sofer. So this creation of Orthodoxy, which meant not... Well, in Hungary, you have the Neologues and the Orthodox and the status quo, but that came later. This is earlier on. This is in 1804. The split in the community in Hungary came much later in the century. Right. However, we know that the Chatam Sofer in his psakim was very innovative. He was not afraid of making drastic decisions. And if we read his tshuva here, he gives a reason, he says. He says, Gzeira Avida Debatla. That this, we're trying to make a piece of legislation in the Jewish community, which is caused by a governmental edict. It's not such a good, he seems to indicate that we do have the power to do this if we want to do it, but we shouldn't be so hasty in making a fundamental change in the character of Jewish marriage just in response to a governmental edict, because governments come and governments go, and we should, and civil marriage is probably, or the government's legislation of marriage as a civil contract to be ruled by government, by civil laws, is probably a passing phenomenon. In other words, probably what you have here is a monumental political error of judgment on the part of the council. You may have thought that with the advent of the Napoleonic Wars and the action against the Napoleonic Wars, there would be a severe return to the reaction, and he was right. I mean, there was a severe reaction taking place, say, after the retreat of Napoleon until maybe as late as 1848 in terms of political reaction. But the takeover of the civil courts of responsibilities, which had been attributed to ecclesiastical courts, was a trend which was growing in force, and you know, a tide which never retreated. And therefore, what you have is disastrous political misjudgment on the part of Chatam Sofer, which basically has paralyzed us for the last 200 years in dealing with these problems. And the typical reaction is not so far from yours. I mean, if you can do this, you can do anything. And therefore, you don't do anything. And therefore, the problem has become more and more acute.
Was there secular pressure to make Jewish law consistent?
There was no secular pressure to do that, but there should have been internal Jewish pressure to do it.
What would have been intrinsically, maybe I'm being naive, difficulty in maintaining your own separate conception of marriage, supposed that would not necessarily...
You're in a situation where the local communities and therefore the local courts no longer have enforcement powers.
Right.
The Jewish courts no longer have control, right? So you have a situation in which the woman is trapped into a marriage and she has no recourse to a court that can save her. This is taking place exactly at the time when the Jewish autonomy over its internal affairs has been essentially eroded and maybe completely disappeared.
Right. But then what are your choices? Your choices are to make yourself completely consistent with the secular so that everything...
Again, you're putting this in a black and white situation. That's not what your choice is. Your choice is to try to adapt to the circumstances and protect the woman's rights and interests, and at the same time not destroy the notion and sanctity of Jewish marriage. But to freeze and say that we can't do anything in a situation where then the woman has no recourse is a disaster. And the current disaster is, you know yourself today what the problems are, say, in a place like the United States. Imagine
that your sister, Chas v'Shalom, wanted to get a divorce and try to force her husband to issue her a get. You know, you're subject to extortion, blackmail, rabbinical paralysis. All of the miseries that we see in the position of women in the Jewish community today, especially in a time of increased divorce rate, are intolerable. But it's not clear that there's unless you can, there'll always be cases, as long as you have your own legal system, where you will say that the person is divorced or not divorced, and the second will say otherwise.
Yeah, but you want to mitigate that. You want to put yourself in a situation where either you have power to enforce your laws, or you want to arrange that this conflict should be mitigated and made as minimal as possible. So here, the situation is not so terrible. I mean, to require that you get a blood test before you're having a kiddushin is not something that in any remote way is going to seriously threaten the sanctity of Jewish marriage. The next big blow from which the Jewish community had never recovered occurred 100 years later than this, and that is with the institution of civil divorce. Here, the problems were not so bad in the sense that the takana, the attempt at the remedy from Trieste, could have resolved this with a minimal amount of damage to Jewish marriage, because the situation wasn't as you described. It's true, Jewish law doesn't require a blood test. The laws of the state of Massachusetts do require a blood test, but it's no great either inconvenience or change in Jewish law or conflict to demand that the husband and wife, and probably maybe it'd be a good idea to demand that the husband and wife have a blood test to see whether they're compatible, or maybe even Tay-Sachs or other various things, genetic screening that may have its own intrinsic dangers, but whatever. That's not a serious problem. So therefore, making that kind of a minor adjustment would not threaten the sanctity of Jewish marriage. But by freezing on that problem, when the next really big hurdle took place, which was 100 years later, with the introduction of civil divorce in France, for example, when you had a whole community which, up until that time, divorce was illegal, just no divorce. But the Catholic Church says there's no divorce, and Jewish law says there is divorce, but it's restrictive, and only the husband can give a get, and you can't coerce, and so on and so forth. Okay, Jewish law, whatever it is less rigid than the current law. But the moment that you had civil divorce, not just civil marriage, but civil divorce, which took place in the 1880s in France, then you had a disastrous situation where the woman could just decide that she wants out of the marriage, and the community has no way of controlling. So, since you had 100 years of history of not responding to this problem because of freezing up, maybe because of the reform movement, maybe because of a bad political judgment, but at the time so fair, when the second round came around, there was just complete panic.
Would you feel that if the Hatam Sofer's stock had not existed, then there would have been sufficient flexibility?
Yes. Okay. So now what happened? So I've sort of summarized the short history of this, but the next major problem came in 1884 with the civil divorce in France. The issue there was then to try to remedy try to do exactly what you said should not be done, namely to adjust the Jewish law to the Jewish divorce law to the French divorce law by declaring all Jewish marriages to be retroactively nullified in the case that the husband or the wife gets a civil divorce. Okay? But for the rabbis living in France and having to deal with this problem on a day-to-day basis, this was essentially their only way out. This way out, which was again accepted in the main by the Sephardic rabbis, by Uchaim Palachi or by Elio Chazan, who were the leading Sephardic rabbis of the century, was violently rejected by the Gedolei Hador living in Russia at the time, say by Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan on the one hand, or by the Netziv. Okay? So if you now look, did I give the second handout? Yes, we now look at the public documents, you can see that whereas the Netziv is extraordinarily flexible when he's writing to his son in a soul-searching analysis of how the halacha, in theory, should be constructed, and maybe also in practice if he had complete control of the situation, when he's writing to a Jewish publication on the issue of the attempt by the French rabbis to introduce a clause nullifying marriages which had been terminated by civil divorce, he just gives the political line. I won't read it through, but you can just see the tone. Al dat ma macha geo shin betzarfat. On the issue of a French divorce. Gia la po alahat spira nil numbero arba'im ba'arba. The hat spira was the standard newspaper. Number 44. Or iti ma mal, and I saw the statement on what was happening in France, but your gaz bit me, and I became violently upset. A rabbi in France, of course this was the entire consistoire, and all of the rabbis in France more or less agreed, the official rabbis in France more or less agreed with the situation, to make civil divorce, Russian Polish Jewish community in Paris at the time, and there was a local Rabbi Lubetzky, who was sort of the from representative of that community. Why? Rabbi Weil wanted to institute the form of clause in the Kiddushin, was just correctly attacked by Rabbi Lubetzky. Even the full Sanhedrin do not have the right to divorce a Jewish woman, but rather to force a husband to do it. More or less in complete contrast to what we saw in the private letter just a few moments ago. Okay? This is printed earlier. I don't have the dates on either one of them. But it doesn't much matter. I think the difference here is between the public position where he has to sustain Judaism against an attack from the left and his actual opinion about what can be done on a purely halakhic point of view. Okay? All right. Well, the next paragraph, I know Dima Lachi Hokia Hekan Shedo Roshabad Dubin Shotehem, and so on. Dama Kisana Shalach, etc. In other words, this is something that's written for a political public consumption rather than a calm, detailed analysis of what can be done and what can't be done. And unfortunately, that's plagued us for the last 100 years. I mean, I sort of ran out of time on my computer, to just summarize the various attempts to deal with these questions, and the situation is always a repeat. Namely, somebody proposes something, then he's attacked by someone on his right saying, this is impossible. And then that person on his right comes to a position of authority, so he proposes basically the same thing. And somebody on his right attacks him because this is against the principle of dualism, right? And it just keeps going like that. I mean, Rob Henkin's proposal and the conservative movement's proposals on this issue, that is, Rob Lieberman's proposals and Rob Henkin's proposals don't differ all that much from one another. Both Rob Henkin, who certainly couldn't be regarded as a leftist, or Rabbi Lieberman were attacked by people on their right, and what has happened, of course, is just a complete paralysis of rabbinical authority dealing with this question. One would have hoped that with the establishment of the State of Israel and the courts there, things would have ameliorated, but I think that the situation in Israel is also coming to crisis, because you're having a situation where you have a modern government granting the sole powers of marriage and divorce to the religious authorities, and on the other hand, but still you have the Supreme Court of Israel, which is a secular court, interfering or not interfering, and the Rabbanim there are also completely paralyzed by being afraid of the people on the right. So the situation of women has gotten successively worse. I had hoped 20 or 30 years ago that there might be a turn for the better, but in fact I think the situation has gotten worse rather than better. And we see that possibilities for remedy exist. That is, one takes the Shulchan Aruch Dvorim, one applies the principles of the Shulchan Aruch Dvorim and of the Netziv within the boundaries